As I have begun to speak about Bolshevism, in order to give you still another example of the strangeness of the being-mentation of your favorites that has become proper to them, I shall tell you about one of their naive rationalizations, which is not without its humor. This naivete of theirs, which arises from their excessively poor, confrontative being judgment, consists in this: that although during the last two centuries all events there, without exception, in the sphere of their mutual relationships occurred entirely automatically, without the participation of the consciousness or intention of any contemporary being, nevertheless they do not hesitate to ascribe, even with envy, all the good or bad results flowing from these events to one or another of their fellow beings. And this abnormality, which has become fixed in the entirety of their spiritualized parts, is due to the following causes. First of all, there have gradually disappeared from their common presence all those being data, the totality of which can engender in beings the property called prescience. And thus they are entirely deprived of the possibility of foreseeing imminent events in any degree whatsoever. Second, having a narrow horizon and a short memory, they not only know nothing about long past events on their planet, but even do not remember what happened quite recently, even yesterday. And third, they have no knowledge of the cosmic laws, thanks chiefly to which there arise those sorrowful events that proceed among them. So these contemporary favorites of yours are convinced with all their presence that this is the first time that the terrible process they call Bolshevism has broken out on their planet, and that nothing like it had ever existed before that darling civilization of theirs. And they are even sure that it happened owing to the progressive evolution of the reason of beings like themselves. Their reasoning on the subject of similar processes, which have taken place many times in the past on their planet, may serve as a good example to illustrate and characterize the phenomenal stupidity and rigidity of their being judgment. The simple common sense of every three-brained being would indicate that such processes were bound to take place, and ever since I became interested in the strange psyche of these favorites of yours and began to occupy myself with observing them in every aspect, I myself have been a witness no less than 40 times of exactly similar processes, which I would call the destruction of everything within sight. It is interesting to note that almost half of all these terrifying processes occurred not far from the place where what they call their cultured existence is now concentrated. That is, they took place on that part of the surface of their planet named Egypt. These terrible processes occurred so often in Egypt because in the course of long periods of time, this part of the surface of your planet has occupied, in relation to the common cosmic harmonious movement, the position of center of gravity of radiations. And that is why the influence of the cosmic law of Soliunensis often acted on the presence of the three-brained beings breeding there, each time bringing forth in them this abnormality. If we compare the authentic data about the events that took place in Egypt with the data on this subject fixed in the being representation and understanding of almost every responsible being of their famous contemporary culture, data which they discovered, as it were, thanks to their already perfected reason, we will have an obvious example of the kind of data on which their logical mentation is built during their responsible existence. Besides, this would allow me to note and stress once more all the maleficence, in an objective sense, of that practice firmly established in the process of their ordinary existence, which they dignify by the high-sounding word of education and schooling of the growing generation. The fact is that among the many kinds of ephemeral, fantastic information, which taken as a whole forms that strange reason proper to them alone, the history of this Egypt likewise has its place. This fantastic history, evidently thought up by some candidate or other for becoming a Hasnavas individual, was even made an obligatory subject in all their educational establishments, where this history, among other similar stupidities, is hammered into their separate concentrations for the functioning of spiritual perceptions and manifestations, or into what they would call the brains of these future responsible beings. And furthermore, when these unfortunates do become responsible beings, all this fantastic information, learned parrot-like under compulsion, serves them as the basis for being associations and logical confrontative mentation. And so today, my boy, on that ill-fated planet, every being of responsible age, instead of having the real knowledge which a normal three-brain being should possess concerning the events that took place on their planet in the past, knows about everything in that same way in which he unconsciously assimilates with his whole being information about this Egypt and speculates about it with his being reason. There's no gainsaying it. Thanks to their system of education and schooling, each of the so-called responsible three-brain beings of this strange planet already knows the history of the beings who existed long ago in Egypt. Yet, the way he knows it, that is, by means of taking in information like a parrot, and what totality of being representations result from this in all three of his spiritualized parts, you may picture to yourself and clearly understand from the following illustration of mine. Almost every one of them knows that the ancient Egyptians had 24 dynasties. But if any one of them is asked, why were there so many dynasties there? It would appear that he had never even thought about it. And if anyone insists on an answer, this same being who up till now knew and was sure with all his presence that there were 24 dynasties among the ancient Egyptians, would at best, provided of course that someone helps him to be sincere and to express aloud the associations flowing in him, reveal his logical mentation in some such way as this. These Egyptians had 24 dynasties. Well, this proves that a monarchical state organization existed among the Egyptians and that the position of king passed by inheritance from father to son. Now, it was customary for kings of the same lineage to have the same family name, and for all the kings of that name to compose one dynasty. Therefore, there were as many dynasties of kings as there were family names. Very understandable and as clear as a patch on the baggy trousers of the Honorable Mullah Nasruddin. And if any of the beings of contemporary culture really longs to know why the family names of these ancient Egyptian kings changed so often, and makes a great effort to explain this to his reason, his being mentation at best will again associate somewhat in the following sequence. Evidently, in olden times, it often happened that in this Egypt, the kings, or as they were called there, pharaohs, grew tired of reigning and abdicated their power to another. And very likely this proceeded in the following way and under the following circumstances. Let us suppose that some pharaoh or other named John Jeffrey lived peacefully and with full satisfaction and ruled over all the Egyptians. Well, it once happened that this same king, or pharaoh, John Jeffrey, felt a very great weariness from all this reigning of his. And one sleepless night, pondering over his kingly position, he realized for the first time with all his being that willy-nilly a man grows tired of reigning, and that this occupation is in general an extremely trying job, and from his personal point of view could not be said to be either useful or safe. Pharaoh John Jeffrey became impressed by this realization, and profiting by the experience acquired in his past existence, decided to try and find a way to prevail upon somebody or other to deliver him from this weariness so undesirable for him. To this end, he probably invited some other still ordinary John Jeffrey to come to him and very politely addressed him more or less as follows. "My highly honorable and incomparably kind John Jeffrey, I frankly confess to you, as to the only friend and subject worthy of my trust, that this kingdom over which I rule has grown too tiresome for me, and this has happened perhaps because I have become extremely weary. Speaking between ourselves, as regards my dear son and heir, to whom I might now hand over the kingdom, although he appears to be very strong and healthy, he is, in fact, neither one nor the other. You, as a father, known for his love of his posterity, will surely understand if I tell you that I love my son and heir greatly, and I would not like him to reign and get as tired as I am. So I have just decided to propose that you, as a faithful subject and personal friend, should deliver me and my son from reigning and take this high obligation upon yourself." And since this still ordinary John Jeffrey was evidently, as is said there, a good sport, and on the other hand, a rascal full of vanity, he shrugged his shoulders and said, with tears in his eyes, "I might as well be hanged for a sheep as a lamb," and agreed, and from the very next day he began to reign. As the family name of this other John Jeffrey was different, on the very next day the number of Egyptian dynasties was increased by one. Now, as many pharaohs of this Egypt often grew tired, and loving their sons, desired to spare them such a fate, they renounced their kingdoms in this way in favor of others, and that is why the number of dynasties mounted up there. In reality, however, the changes of dynasty in Egypt did not proceed so simply. And in the intervals between dynasties, such perturbations took place there that in comparison with them, contemporary Bolshevism is merely child's play. More than once, in the heat of this contemporary Bolshevism, I happened to witness how several beings who, for reasons of course independent of them personally, had not taken part in this process, and so could half-consciously observe it from outside, grew sincerely indignant with all their presence at the actions of the beings similar to themselves who participated in this terrifying process, and whom they called, and still call, Bolsheviks. In my opinion, it will do no harm to tell you in this connection that that being experiencing of theirs, which is admirably characterized by the words, "vainly to grow sincerely indignant," is also one of the unfortunate peculiarities of the psyche of these ill-fated three-brained beings who please you, especially the contemporary ones. This psychic abnormality has the effect of gradually deranging in their common presence many functionings, both of their planetary body, already deranged without this, and of their Kesjan body, if, of course, this second being body is already coated in them and has attained the required individuality. And this abnormality of their psyche, namely, vainly to grow indignant, or, as they sometimes say, to get needlessly upset, also flows from the fact that there has long since disappeared from their common presence the being horizon proper to three brain beings, as well as the instinctive sensing of reality in its true light. On account of the absence of these two particularities in their psyche, they cannot even vaguely suspect that individual beings similar to themselves are in no way the cause of these terrifying processes, but that these processes take place on their ill-fated planet from two inevitable great causes. The first of these causes is precisely that cosmic law of soliunensis, entirely independent of them. And the second cause, which partly depends on them, is that thanks to all the results of the abnormal conditions of ordinary being existence established by them, the data that continue to be crystallized in their common presence for bringing forth the sacred impulse of conscience do not in general take part in the functioning of the ordinary waking state of any of them, which is the reason why the action of the first cause takes such a terrible form. As I have just said, your favorites cannot even approximately understand that individual persons are in no way the cause of these terrifying planetary processes, and only by chance happen to occupy positions which compel them, on account of the established conditions of mutual existence, to manifest themselves in one role or another. And the results of these roles take one form or another with a rigorous conformity to law entirely independent of them themselves. At the height of this last process of theirs, namely Russian Bolshevism, beings of other communities were sincerely indignant on learning that those who by chance had become, as it were, active in this distressing process were giving orders to other ordinary beings to shoot some Tom, Dick, or Harry. To clarify my further explanations about these terrifying processes, I must tell you that this last process is still going on today on a large area of the surface of this ill-fated planet, and also that during recent times, these favorites of yours have very greatly increased in number. Thus, if we compare the relative number of three-brain beings destroyed in the last process with that of earlier processes, the current one will indeed seem child's play. In order that you may understand this better and be able to compare those former processes with contemporary Bolshevism, I will now describe to you a couple of little scenes from ancient history, from, let us say, that Egypt I have just mentioned. In one of the intervals between dynasties of these Egyptian pharaohs or kings, when a process similar to this contemporary Bolshevism was taking place in Egypt, the governing committee of the revolutionaries announced, among other things, to all the population of that country that elections would soon be held for the chiefs of large and small centers, or as they say, towns and villages, and that these elections would be carried out according to the following principle. Those would be elected as chiefs of the towns and villages who put into their sacred urns a greater number of what are called kroans than the others. A kroan was the name then given in Egypt to a sacrificial offering. Now, my boy, according to the religion of the beings of this country, during the ceremonies which were conducted in special places, it was the custom to set before each ordinary being attending these ceremonies a special clay urn, in which, after reciting certain prayers, he had to put the vegetables or fruit designated for that day. Well, the object considered worthy to be offered as sacrifices were then called kroans. In all probability, this manipulation had been invented by the theocrats of that time as a source of revenue for the benefit of their spongers, as they are called. In the decree about which I have just told you, it was stipulated that on that occasion the Croans were to consist of the eyes of the bandits. The name the ordinary three-brained beings gave to those of the ruling class behind their back, and that no exception was to be made for the beings of the passive sex, children, or the aged. It was further stated in this decree that the one who had the most Croans in his sacred urn on the day of the elections would be appointed chief of all Egypt, and as I already said, as regards the towns and villages, those beings would be appointed as chiefs who had the correspondingly greatest number of Croans in their sacred urns. You may picture to yourself, my boy, what went on that day everywhere in Egypt for the sake of collecting in their sacred urns the greatest number of eyes of the beings who in that period of the flow of time belonged to the caste of the ruling class.